forces that the new global order is thrusting upon us. No government of a developmentally challenged country can make peace with mediocrity in the management of its country's affairs. The posture it assumes must engender confidence on the world market, since this is the vital element that positively defines the quality of the engagement with the international powers that circumscribe our political processes, our national aspirations, and our societal objectives. Mr. Speaker, in the context of our times and the immediacy of our regional and local commitments and obligations, this budget is a balanced one. The social and economic infrastructures are being addressed in a manner, and as the Prime Minister stated, that will provide the best combination of policies and will propel the economy on a higher growth path and safeguard our macroeconomic stability over the medium to long term. What is to be noted, Mr. Speaker, is that this projected growth and stability is not predicated upon what may be termed as raw economics and the dispassionate though astute manipulation of ratios and figures. In this budget, Mr. Speaker, we saw governance with a human face. We saw compassion and concern for our people in their varying situations of need. And in this regard, one may allude to the following. The school book rental program, contemplated pension for farmers and fishers, the increase in the pension for former government employees, and the increase in public assistance to the poor, the increase in the allocation to geriatric homes, the relocation of a Conrail residence, and the package of incentives to farmers and cooperatives. Mr. Speaker, even the deductions for solar water heating systems and the bread and breakfast concessions can, with some elasticity, reflect this humanitarian thrust. The issue of crime was not ignored, Mr. Speaker. And as the Prime Minister said in his budget, in order to enhance competitiveness and provide a solid foundation to accelerate economic growth, we need to initiate or accomplish six things, unquote. And one of these, Mr. Speaker, was improving the justice system and reducing the levels of crime. And in this regard, Mr. Speaker, he has increased the budget of the Ministry of Home Affairs and Internal Security by $6.7 million, bringing it to $59.9 million. Further, the allocation to the Ministry of Justice has been increased by $2.7 million, bringing it to $11.5 million. Mr. Speaker, the intention to provide universal health care for our people is more than laudable. It is the enlightened and pragmatic response to a universal need that embraces the principle of the democratization of healthcare services. The old and the indigent will have unqualified access, and the society, in terms of its sectoral productivity, will benefit. For there is indeed a positive correlation between productive efficiency and health. Mr. Speaker, in his budget address, the Prime Minister elucidated at some length on the World Cup cricket tournament 2007, its problems, difficulties, responsibilities, and anticipated successes. And the question that we the people need to ask ourselves is whether we should embrace this venture and give it our best as a people and as a nation. In response to this, Mr. Speaker, to this question, we shall in some measure reiterate what we stated at the last budget address, since the point we endeavored to make is as relevant now as it was then. Mr. Speaker, from a purely pecuniary point of view, this tournament will be a very costly venture, a somewhat burdensome undertaking. However, in terms of its immediate, medium, and long-term benefits, this country must, with courage and confidence, and sagacity creatively engage the force of history in order to raise the level of its national existence. Mr. Speaker, this is an extraordinary time, an extraordinary opportunity for our people to positively project themselves as a nation across transnational boundaries and on the world stage. And so it is important, Mr. Speaker, that we engage the fervor, enthusiasm, and support of our people in this venture of global proportions and universal dimensions. This is certainly not small island activity, but the world in action in our front yard, Mr. Speaker. And so our people must be seized with the historicity of the event and be reconciled to the fact that the greatness of a people and a country comes at a price. And it is a price that should be not be measured in crass pecuniary equations and ratios, but a price that sublimely identifies with the heartbeat of a nation and its people. Thus, it is imperative, Mr. Speaker, that our people as a whole be on board, since the synergies created will redound to the benefit not only of government, but most importantly, to our collective cohesiveness and solidarity as a nation. It will help to create a feeling of national pride, a sense of national identity, and national purpose. For it is the absence of those attributes that at this time has given us a rather jaundiced perception of our place in the national scheme of things. This tournament, Mr. Speaker, is indeed a historic event that will in some measure provide the justification for our two premier sporting facilities. If we, Mr. Speaker, do not grasp the mettle, if we do not fully and patriotically participate in the making of history not to be forgotten, we will indeed deserve the obloquy of this and succeeding generations of youth. Considering the societal malaise that presently exists, particularly when we focus on the crime situation, Mr. Speaker, our people are in desperate need of what may be termed as the elan vitae of our societal existence. We need to be consumed by a feeling of national exhilaration, national excitement, exuberance, and national pride. We as a people, Mr. Speaker, need to participate in the consummation of this historic event, it would give rise to a national catharsis that in a rather abstruse manner would expiate in some measure the deficiencies and dysfunctionalities in our society. Mr. Speaker, this is a budget of faith, a budget of confidence. So what more do we need as a people, as a nation, to engage the exalting forces of history? Should we stand before the colossus of time and peep around to find ourselves dishonorable graves? Mr. Speaker, this is a government of honor. And this budget emanating from the heart and mind of its leadership is indeed replete with honorable intentions. Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, from our ministerial perspective, we shall begin our review of the past year as far as the Labor Department is concerned by focusing some attention on what obtained in that department. But before doing so, a short preamble would suffice, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the fusion of the three departments, labor relations, the public service, and cooperatives, offers a unique blend of interactions with the business sector, the government, and the society at large. On the labor side, we offer redress to the workers of this country, seek employment opportunities for the unemployed, and provide advice and conciliation to both employers and employees. As regards the Public Service Department, it serves as a central human resource agency for the public service, by providing in-service training, negotiating terms and conditions of service for all public officers, ensuring an adequate physical working environment for staff, and serving as a central advisory agency on human resource matters. And lastly, the cooperative department facilitates the financial and non-financial cooperatives and offers advice, provides resource personnel and technical support to these organizations. Mr. Speaker, the year under review saw the transfer of the Deputy Permanent Secretary, Mr. Cyrus Reynolds, to the Ministry of Commerce, and the appointment of Mistress Alison Jean to the position. At this time, Mr. Reynolds has gone on pre-retirement leave. At this juncture, Mr. Speaker, at this juncture in his life, we wish him the best, particularly in health. We further express our thanks and appreciation for his long and dedicated and productive service to the people of this country. Mr. Speaker, as we have said in times past, the greatness of a man is never his alone. And in like manner, the greatness of an institution must for the greater part be attributed to the many who work in the shadows. In addition, Mr. Speaker, the demitting from office of Permanent Secretary Mr. Wilbert King in recent times has led to the appointment of Mr. Mark Louis as our acting Permanent Secretary of this ministry. We wish Mr. King success in his post-retirement endeavors, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the mission statement of the Labor Relations Department reads thus: to encourage and maintain a stable and harmonious industrial relations climate in collaboration with the social partners and provide quality service to the public through the administration and enforcement of labor laws. The period April 2004 to March 2005 was a challenging one, Mr. Speaker, for the Department of Labor Relations. The department's ruling on a number of industrial relations matters and was challenged by both trade union and employers. All but one, however, which is now before the courts for judicial review, was settled, and the ultimate ruling of the department was upheld. For the period under review, Mr. Speaker, industrial activity can be characterized as fairly stable. The industrial relations arm of the Department of Labor Relations reported that it was able to deal with problems in the workplace, though encountering a moderate degree of difficulty in the process. Despite this level of stability, and which has characterized the period 1997 to the present, it must be noted that with the upcoming CSME arrangements, the anticipated increased influx of workers from regional countries will have serious implications for the industrial activity on this island. The Ministry of Labor Relations envisages not only increased economic activity by virtue of this influx, but also a corresponding increase in grievances, disputes, and other work-related problems. This past year, Mr. Speaker, was not so much a reflection of this expectation, since the CSME has not yet been fully operationalized. However, workers are increasingly expressing their need for union representation and collective bargaining approaches over individualized representation, Mr. Speaker. The statistics over the past 12 months reveal the following, Mr. Speaker. Number of applications received for union recognition, 40. Number of voluntary recognition, that is without polls, 4. Number of successful recognition through polls, 5. And number of unsuccessful recognition through polls, 5. Mr. Speaker, this result indicates that 9 out of 14 applications for union recognition were approved by workers, a success rate of 62%. In addition to this, Mr. Speaker, the results show that in 38% of the cases, employers were inclined to accept those trade unions without the requirement or benefits of polls being taken. This is an encouraging statistic, as it is an indication of a predisposition for union-employer engagements, a welcome development in this era of global changes and economic integration. Mr. Speaker, on the other side of the coin, we have encountered situations where employees have unequivocally expressed their dissatisfaction with the representation given to them by some trade unions, and in consequence thereof, Mr. Speaker, have requested that the Labour Commissioner to withdraw the recognition status of those unions. Employees have succeeded in voting for withdrawals in 4 out of 5 instances this past year. The Department of Labour, Mr. Speaker, over the past year, continued to resolve disputes in the workplace between employees and management. This issue of complaint settlement has always occupied a sizable portion of its time. And in the year under review, the statistics reveal the following. Number of individual complaints lodged, 854. Number of complaints settled, 746. Number of persons seeking advice from the department, 910. And numbers of establishments visited, 530. Because, Speaker, it thus can be concluded that this department is accomplishing its mandate as regards the settling of grievances and the maintenance of industrial peace. 746 of the 854 grievances were settled, a success rate of 87.35%. The 530 visits to workplaces made by the officers of the department were for the purpose of labor inspections, workplace discussions, and meetings with management. First-time workplace inspection, Mr. Speaker, for the period under review was at a low of 107. That is compared to the previous period during which 364 inspections were carried out. This differential, Mr. Speaker, was due in part to the increased emphasis placed on follow-up visits, the handling of grievances, increased activity in the Canada Farm Workers Program, and intense work on the Labour Code. However, as part of our strategy for 2005-2006, Mr. Speaker, this aspect of our mandate will be given greater attention, as it is our view that increased workplace inspections will help alleviate worker-employee tension and dispute and heighten the feeling of harmony in the workplace. A cardinal component for increased productivity. Additionally, Mr. Speaker, disputes of a collective nature were lodged with the department, and these involved situations where employer, union, domestic negotiations broke down or resulted in a deadlock. Such deadlock can and do have negative economic and industrial implications and impacts. For the greater part, the department has informally enabled contending parties to arrive at the amicable settlements of their disputes and issues. Mr. Speaker, during the year under review, 28 such cases were brought to the attention of the department for mediation. All were resolved on that level, and parties had no recourse to the arbitration tribunal. Our mission statement, Mr. Speaker, is indeed alive and well. Mr. Speaker, we shall now at this juncture focus some attention on the Occupational Health and Safety Unit of this department. The Senior Occupational Health and Safety Officer, who is the sole officer within that unit, was called upon during the years under review to make a number of interventions at various public and private sector establishments where the issues of health and safety were matters of concern. He was in some measure instrumental in bringing closure to some issues and is presently involved in the resolution of others. With the assistance of the Division of Human Services and Family Affairs, he is spearheading an occupational health and safety plan for that division. Mr. Speaker, it is to be noted that this unit is guided by a policy of providing a mechanism for improving occupational health and safety in the workplace through well-managed occupational hygiene programs. And the objectives of this unit are as follows. 1, the maintenance and promotion of workers' health, safety, and working capacity. And 2, the improvement of the working environment and work culture in a manner that supports health and safety at work and augmentation of productivity. During the year under review, Mr. Speaker, this unit was very involved in the national program dealing with HIV/AIDS, particularly as it relates to the workplace environment. The Health and Safety Unit continues to develop strategic collaborative linkages with other stakeholders in the society in order to fulfill its mandate. And these are the Public Health Board and the Hazardous Management Committee and the St. Lucia Employers Federation. Mr. Speaker, considering that Occupational Health and Safety Unit is manned by one man, its performance over the years has been remarkable. And in this regard, Mr. Maguire is indeed deserving of our commendation. Mr. Speaker, with regard to the issue of work permits, the department granted 531, and of this number, 60% were for renewals. The revenue collected for the issuance of those permits was $2,141,175. Once again, Mr. Speaker, we recognize that a significant number of permits were granted for managerial positions in the commercial hotel sector. In fact, out of 53%, 273 or 51%, 51.4% were for management. For us here in the public arena, the requisite training and experience can be problematic. Our present emphasis, Mr. Speaker, is to ensure that as a matter of policy for those establishments, a training regime is put into place to replace the foreign workers after 1 or 2 years. Mr. Speaker, we shall now move to the local workers program, to the local workers program overseas. Mr. Speaker, the Canadian Seasonal Agricultural Workers Program continues to provide employment for a number of our male youth. A total of 118 workers were selected to work on various farms in Canada in 2004. All of these workers returned home by the end of November 2004 and were paid the compulsory savings of $355,671 by the Labour Department. Mr. Speaker, this amount represents approximately 17% of their gross earnings, meaning therefore that these farm workers earned in excess of $2 million during their season in Canada. It is anticipated that based on initiatives taken by this ministry and the liaison officer for the OECS, Mr. Egbert Lionel, St. Lucia will realize an increase in the number of workers participating in this program for the year 2005. Mr. Speaker, there are two other foreign programs we shall now allude to. They are the H2A and the H2B programs. The former is essentially an agricultural program in which we were involved in the 70s and in the 80s. These two programs, Mr. Speaker, are US-based. The latter being non-agricultural and hospitality-oriented. That is the hotel service. Mr. Speaker, when by U.S. law, it became mandatory for U.S. employers to meet the cost of transportation for Caribbean workers, the OECS were virtually forced out of this program. It was the conjunction of economics and geographical propinquity, Mr. Speaker. Jamaica being the closest, Mr. Speaker, to the U.S., the employers from the U.S. gravitated to that country. At this time, we are endeavoring to penetrate the H2B hospitality program, which for the Caribbean is administratively managed by the Jamaica Central Labor Organization, the JCLO, and virtually monopolized by it. We are trying to, at this point in time, trying to rectify the situation. In February of this year, Mr. Speaker, a delegation consisting of the Labor Commissioner, Her Excellency Sonia Johnny, and ourselves participated in a board meeting of the West Indian Regional Labor Board, of which the JCLO is the administrative arm. At that meeting, we made it abundantly clear that there must be an equitable distribution of participating Caribbean workers in that program. Her Excellency Sonia Johnny has undertaken the task of lobbying the U.S. Congress so that this principle of equity can be realized. On our part, Mr. Speaker, we took the initiative to convene a meeting of labor ministers of the Southern Caribbean region, at which will be discussed the stratagem to be employed that would facilitate our individual and collective participation in the H2B hospitality program. This meeting will be held in about 3 weeks' time. Mr. Speaker, we should at this point in time focus some attention on the Beaufort branch of the Department of Labor Relations during the period under review. This department, Mr. Speaker, received a total of 322 complaints, out of which 290 were settled. The majority of these complaints, Mr. Speaker, emanated from wholesale, retail, and hotel establishments, 92 in all, and 72 from the construction sector. This department's intervention was requested in 11 disputes between the trade unions and employers. 10 of these were amicably settled. The officer in charge of the Southern Division also conducted a number of educational exercises at schools and workplaces. Similar exercises were carried out at other venues for non-governmental organizations, Mr. Speaker. What is desperately needed in the Southern Division is an adequately manned unit with one occupational health and safety officer, two labor officers, and one secretary. It is only by so doing, Mr. Speaker, that industrial relations of the South, which include Sufre and Miku, can be competently and professionally addressed. Mr. Speaker, during the year under review, the department saw the establishment of an information processing unit. This unit is expected to organize, collate, interpret, and publish reliable labor statistics concerning these areas: employment, unemployment, underemployment, occupational injuries, diseases, and other relevant matters emanating from an economically active population. The staff of this unit underwent in-house training and fully commenced operations in March of this year. We are at last, Mr. Speaker, beginning to shed the image of being a bastardized appendage of the governmental corpus. As we see, Mr. Speaker, the potential of a Department of Labor is far from being realized. Mr. Speaker, with regard to the Labor Code, the much talked about Labor Code, with regard to the status of that document, all that can be said at this time, Mr. Speaker, is that the Labor Department has done virtually all that needs to be done in the preparation of this document. At present, this draft code is before the drafters of the Attorney General's chambers. The normal process from there, Mr. Speaker, is submission to Cabinet for onward transmission to this Honorable House. We are hoping that by July of this year, this document will have metamorphosed from a draft to a bill and then to an act, a legislative instrument, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we shall at this juncture address ourselves to the Department of the Public Service for the year under review. This department is made up of the administration, personnel, training, establishment, and negotiating units. In the year under review, Mr. Speaker, this department works steadfastly in the accomplishment of various strategies outlined in the strategic plan. And in the process of so doing, engage the public sector reform unit in various initiatives. During the latter part of 2004, the department commenced a vigorous pursuance of consultations towards the development of a HIV/AIDS workplace policy for the public service. This policy is expected to cover issues relating to 1, compliance with existing legislation and public service rule and policies; 2, hiring, promotion, transfer, leave, retirement, and dismiss policies with regard to employees and potential employees with HIV/AIDS. 3, maintaining confidentiality of employee medical records and information. 4, defining ways management will address workplace discrimination. And 5, promoting prevention and understanding through employee education. The ministry has since received commitments from the World Bank in the support of this project. The ministry also received support from the OAS for the development of the HIV/AIDS in the workplace program. And the objectives of this program are to 1, formulate a national HIV/AIDS workplace policy, 2, provide HIV/AIDS education and prevention within the workplace, 3, provide care and support to employees living with HIV/AIDS, and 4, fight the stigma and discrimination associated with this disease. To this end, Mr. Speaker, the AIDS Action Foundation was contracted to conduct an assessment of HIV/AIDS policies, programs, and awareness in the workplaces in St. Lucia. A report was submitted to us in October 2004. Mr. Speaker, the ministry was also involved in a high-level regional conference where the object was to involve leaders at every level of a society to commit themselves to bringing about changes in the way people respond to those who are afflicted with the disease in the workplace. We are of the opinion and belief, Mr. Speaker, that the effective coordination and execution of an HIV/AIDS in the workplace program, much can be done to eradicate this pandemic in our midst. Public servants, it must be noted, are not immune to this disease. During the period under review, Mr. Speaker, the personnel section continued to attract and recruit a cadre of trained and professional individuals to fill vacant positions within the service. Worthy of note is the establishment of a committee of assistant secretaries and the appointment of a person involved in human resource personnel administration. The objective of this committee, Mr. Speaker, is to disseminate the policies of the service and to provide interpretation for their implementation. During the period under review, Mr. Speaker, 2 workshops were held with assistant secretaries of the various ministries. The first was on the 28th to the 29th September 2004 and dealt with the legal aspects of the roles and functions of the public service. The second was on the 26th of November 2004, where the disciplinary process in the public service was reviewed. Certain policy positions were taken, Mr. Speaker, during the year under review. They are in part, 1, the policy on secondment/leave of absence was updated by Cabinet to allow public officers who have been on secondment or on leave of absence to serve a maximum period of 4 years over two contractual periods. 2, the policy on vacating a post was approved by Cabinet. And so we now have a clear documented policy statement indicating the circumstances in which an officer's position can be declared vacant. And 3, the Public Service Commission delegated its power to commence disciplinary action to the Comptroller of Customs. The grades affected are from 5 to 11. And the disciplinary action that can be taken by the Comptroller of Customs is 1, all suspension. It is to be noted, Mr. Speaker, that the Attorney General, by way of opinion, clarified the issue of lateral transfers of firemen and police officers to the public service. At present, officers within the fire service and public service can be so transferred, but with their consent. Mr. Speaker, for the period under review, the Trading Division continued to administer the trading policy of the service. Through the processing of 1, study leave with pay awards, 2, study leave without pay awards, tuition refund awards, and 4, short-term overseas training. Mr. Speaker, 118 applications for study leave with pay were processed in the year under review. 57 awards were granted, and of those, 40 were accepted. 111 applications for study leave without pay were processed. 35 awards were granted. And with regard to the tuition refund program, it has been suspended pending a review by the public sector reform unit. The training division, Mr. Speaker, also conducted orientation workshops for the new recruits into the service. And these workshops are expected to equip the new employees with knowledge of the public service policies, structures, functions, rules, and regulations. Mr. Speaker, the establishment division is charged with the responsibility for organization development interventions aimed at the congruence between organization structure, processes, strategies, human resources, and culture. This unit deals specifically with one, organizational structure, two, facility management government-wide, and data records management. During the year under review, Mr. Speaker, the division conducted organizational reviews on agencies which made requests for restructuring or the creation of posts. The division met a number of requests for physical office space through the rental of properties. In this regard, housing was secured for the Japanese volunteers, custom officers, and other relocated officers. The division also facilitated the refurbishment of government offices by the redesigning of infrastructure to ensure comfortable and suitable office accommodation. Mr. Speaker, recognizing the importance of reliable data in the decision-making process, this unit maintained the SmartStream database with updates on staff changes and movement. However, there's still the need to review the entire system to eliminate errors and duplication and omissions and incorrect information. We shall be embarking on this exercise very shortly. The Ministry's newsletter, which provides vital and work-related information, was produced during the last financial year. This time around, we anticipate an improvement in the quality of articles presented, and which will be geared towards the resolution of recurring problems in the service due to lack of the requisite information or knowledge on the part of employees. Mr. Speaker, the negotiating division of this department was instrumental in the completion of all outstanding payments to employees who fell under the collective agreements of the public service unions. In accordance with Article 7(4), 7 subsection 4, the collective agreement between the National Workers Union order. And the Government of St. Lucia.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, Honourable Member for Castries Central.
Mr. Speaker, I hate to interrupt these proceedings, but I wish to refer to Order 3211, which states very clearly that the minister shall not read his speech, but he may read extracts from written or printed papers or books in support of his argument, and may refresh his memory by reference to his notes. The minister is giving a ministerial report. He's not debating the appropriation bill.
Honourable Member for Labrie, would you reply?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I'm just referring to my very detailed notes, Mr. Speaker, as we have done in times past.
Honourable Member for Castries Central, we all know that these notes
and as she has done,
are nothing else but the writings of Honourable Member for Labrie. There is no doubt in your mind or in my mind. He's not reading, he's merely refreshing his mind continuously.
I concede, Mr. Speaker.
For Labrie.
Mr. Speaker, in accordance with Article 7.4 of the collective agreement between the National Workers Union and the Government of St. Lucia, a joint technical committee comprising representatives from the union, the Accountant General's Department, and this ministry was established to regularize the categories of employees under wages so as to determine appropriate grading and wage rates based on job functions and duties. This committee, Mr. Speaker, meets regularly so that this exercise will be completed in this financial year. Also at this time, Mr. Speaker, the unit is in the process of reviewing and giving effect to all clauses of the collective agreements of all bargaining units. Where employee grievances arise, this unit is often called upon to effect a quick and amicable resolution to those problems. Very often, the result of its intervention is positive. Mr. Speaker, with the passage and enactment of this appropriations bill, the Department of Public Sector Reform will formally be entrenched in this ministry. Henceforth, the designation of this ministry is as follows: the Ministry of Labor Relations, Public Service, Public Sector Reform, and Cooperatives.
Indeed.
Mr. Speaker, as we see it, the reform of the public service continues to be of paramount importance and concern to this government. The strategies to reform have been published in the government's white paper on public sector reform. Already a number of the strategies in various forms have received the attention of this government. These strategies span the boundaries of many ministries, and various terminologies have been used to describe them. We've got one here: customs reform, budgetary reform, reform of local government systems, and in recent times, health sector reform. Mr. Speaker, the aim of such reform, as elucidated in the white paper of public sector reform, is to develop a public service imbued with a strong ethical, professional, and national development orientation, which is capable of delivering cost-effective quality service. Mr. Speaker, the achievement of such requires the attention be paid to appropriate rewards and sanctions, performance management, the utilization of information technology and design of organization structures, systems and processes that would make the public service more responsive and act more responsibly in serving the people of this country.
The honourable member has 15 minutes remaining to make his contribution.
I need about half an hour.
May continue, honourable member for library.
Towards this end, Mr. Speaker, it is essential that the appropriate legal environment be put in place. In this context, members of the House will be called upon during this financial year to examine and to debate on the Public Service Act and its supporting regulations, Mr. Speaker. The staff orders, Mr. Speaker, which is essentially anachronistic with dubious legal validity, will be relegated at last to the trash heap of historical oddities, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the constitutional body charged with the mandate of appointing and exercising control over public officers is the Public Service Commission. In support of the reform initiative, this body is itself preparing its Public Service Commission rules and regulations. This document will lay out the manner in which issues of appointment and discipline will be handled in a reform environment. This ministry is very much involved in that process. Mr. Speaker, the Public Sector Reform Unit, which now forms part of our portfolio, will play a lead role in all of these initiatives. And so honorable members can therefore rest assured that many of the plans laid out during this budget will be achieved, as we will have a public service that recognizes its importance in achieving the developmental goals of the country as laid out in the budget presentation of the Honorable Prime Minister. Mr. Speaker, at this juncture, we shall focus some attention on the third sector of this ministry, which is cooperatives. Mr. Speaker, cooperatives is an autonomous association of persons who voluntarily join together to meet the economic, social, cultural needs and aspirations through the formation of a jointly owned enterprise, contributing equitably to the capital required, accepting a fair share of the risks and benefits, and participating in its management and democratic control. In its operation, it is characterized by the values of self-help, self-responsibility, democracy, equality, equity, and solidarity. And it is the dynamic and focused expression of these qualities in an atmosphere of trust and reliance that have made credit unions worldwide a veritable success. At this time, Mr. Speaker, there are in St. Lucia 44 cooperatives, 16 are credit unions, 5 transport cooperatives, 13 fishermen cooperatives, and 2 arts and craft cooperatives. And providing general leadership and guidance is the Cooperative League of St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, it can be said that in St. Lucia, cooperatives in particular, and in particular credit unions, have been a success. And for the period under review, this sector has surpassed the 200 million asset mark. The 200 million asset mark. And for the same period, we have had some successes in one, hosting the second OECS Credit Union Summit in May 2004, and to holding the first Caribbean Union Youth Conference in April 2004. Mr. Speaker, the credit union sector has not been static. There has been continuous growth in those areas that reflect its viability and durability. For example, for the year 2003, total assets were 200 million. In 2004, total assets are approximately 221 million. Savings in 2003 amounted to 143 million. And in 2004, it is $171 million approximately. The capital base in 2003 was approximately 23 million. And in 2004, it was 29 million. Loans in 2003 was 141 million approximately. And in 2004, it was 154 million. And the membership, Mr. Speaker, in 2003 was 43,041, whereas in 2004 it increased to 46,977. Mr. Speaker, the 5 leading credit unions in St. Lucia in descending order of superiority are, first, the St. Lucia Civil Service Credit Union, 2, the Library Cooperative, and with assets of $88 million, secondly, the Library Cooperative Credit Union, with assets of $26 million. The St. Lucia Teachers, thirdly, the St. Lucia Teachers Credit Union, with assets of $20 million. Fourth, the Royal St. Lucia Police Credit Union, with assets of $18 million. And fifthly, the Soselle Cooperative Credit Union, with assets of $17 million. Mr. Speaker, from these statistics, one can appreciate the vital role that credit union plays in the life of the ordinary people, particularly in the rural areas. And because of its expanding influence, credit unions as the bedrock institution of the ordinary man must continue its repositioning to facilitate the appropriate readaptation and strategic reintegration of the rural sector into the broader reforming global movement. The SRU, Mr. Speaker, the single regulatory unit notwithstanding. For the credit union, Mr. Speaker, represents a more user-friendly sector of the financial landscape, which provides not only access to favorable credit facilities, but also allows for direct participation by members through democratic means in the conduct of its business. Mr. Speaker, the rapid expansion of the credit union sector has placed itself as a victim of its own successes and has opened new challenges vital to the sustainability of the sector. Therefore, Mr. Speaker, as we see it, credit union must now be equipped with the state-of-the-art technology which will endow their administrations with computerized capability. They need to collaborate with the Caribbean Confederation of Credit Unions in operating within a modernized regulatory and supervisory framework and thus ensuring high industry compliance. And lastly, they need to establish robust precautionary measures to ensure the safety and soundness of the sector. Mr. Speaker, credit unions must continue to spread the tentacles of the cooperative spirit, for it represents the fabric of every rural society and is the only true and authentic medium for the alleviation of poverty in the rural environment. On the whole, Mr. Speaker, credit union has served its members well and has been a major contribution to national development. Assets of $200 million so attest, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we shall now allude to the non-financial sphere of the cooperative sector. And it consists of the fishermen's cooperative, the agricultural cooperative, the transport and taxi cooperative, and the crafts cooperative. As regards the fishermen's cooperative, there are nine, one of which the East Coast cooperative in the Biku area is essentially moribund. The other fishing cooperatives are situated in Groseley, Castries, Ancillary, Soufre, Swazel, Labrie, and Beaufort. Denry also. Thank you. Most of them manage the relatively new fishing complexes that have been built by this administration. And by virtue of the facilities provided, the piscatorial activities of the membership have been augmented and enhanced. Some of these facilities, Mr. Speaker, are landing ramps, locker rooms, workshop office facilities, fuel stations, and even ice-making plants. The fishing industry, Mr. Speaker, has moved to a higher level, and the fish retail market is now able to meet the high standards being demanded by health authorities and consumers. The challenge is for the respective cooperatives to make optimum use of the opportunities presented by the modernized facilities. Of the 13 agricultural cooperatives, Mr. Speaker, only six are fully functional, with the Bellevue Farmers taking the lead. It is a very viable vegetable cooperative, and which has forged an effective commercial linkage with the hotel industry. In promoting the vegetable farming component of the agricultural sector, it has led in the formation of the St. Lucia Farmers Cooperative Association, with the Black Bay, Grace, and Vance farmers as members. With increasing emphasis on tourism, farmers must increase the links between agriculture and tourism. The opportunities and potential that lie therein must be explored and exploited by the farmers of this country. Generally speaking, Mr. Speaker, the questions that need to be asked are, why our farmers are not capitalizing on these opportunities, and why the failure rate among agricultural cooperatives is relatively high. Mr. Speaker, generically speaking, the problems associated with the farmers' cooperatives are many, and they include, 1, small-scale operation, 2, land availability, 3, low-level capital, 4, weak management, 5, low-level capital, and 6, absence of an entrepreneurial approach.
The honourable member has 5 minutes left to make his contribution.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to invoke Standing Order 3210 of the Standing Orders of this Honourable House to permit the Honourable 30 to permit the Honourable Minister for Public Service, Labour Relations and Cooperatives an additional 30 minutes within which to complete his presentation.
Honourable members, the question is that the Honourable Member for Labrie be allowed a further 1 hour? 30 minutes to make his contribution. I now put the question, as many are of that opinion say aye. As many are of a contrary opinion say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Leave is granted, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Honourable Colleagues. And with regard to these problems, these are matters that we will seek to address in this financial year. Mr. Speaker, as regards the transportation taxi cooperatives, in recent times, it seems to be in the ascendancy. And this in part can be attributed to the dedication and prudential management practices of that sector. the introduction of a code of conduct and the minimum operating standards instituted for vehicle use have had a positive effect on the cooperative traffic. Through intensive marketing research and promotion, the cooperative sector have finally understood that the ultimate aim and objective is to provide reliable quality service which meets international standards and thus delivering a better product to the tourism industry. The holiday taxi cooperative must be singled out for the high standards it has set in the execution of its functions. Generally speaking, Mr. Speaker, it is one of the cooperatives in St. Lucia that does not compromise its obligations to its membership in fulfilling its obligations of providing an acceptable economic livelihood. Mr. Speaker, what needs to be addressed is the factious elements within the Transport Taxi Brotherhood that are undermining the viability and integrity of the organization, which has a very important role to play in the unfolding process of our tourism agenda. Mr. Speaker, the Arts and Crafts Cooperative is one of the budding and promising areas in the cooperative pantheon. There is tremendous potential within that sector which has to be harnessed, exploited, and developed. There is in part, and this in part, Mr. Speaker, can be done by establishing a commercial nexus with the tourism sector. The expansion of this sector can provide much-needed training and employment for the young people of this country. As we see it, Mr. Speaker, the time is ripe for expansion and development. Thus, we urge the Castries Arts and Crafts Cooperative, the Cannibal Cooperative of Canneries, and the Labri organization to explore the possibilities for growth and development by liaising with the Bell Fund, SEDU, the OPSR, and similar funding agencies. Mr. Speaker, with the emergence of the single regulatory unit, the time has come for public discussion on the reconstruction, redefinition, and refocusing of the cooperative movement. We cannot allow the cooperative spirit to die in our society, since the future of our country must be based on the bedrock institutions of the ordinary people. Mr. Speaker, we shall now speak with some brevity on the work program of this ministry for the year 2005-2006. Mr. Speaker, as we battle the challenges of the global environment and usher in the regional economic integration, the Ministry of Labour Relations, Public Service and Cooperatives will continue to drive the reform agenda. Particular attention will be paid to the issues of performance and productivity. The interventions highlighted, coupled with ongoing initiatives, will assist in the incremental realization of our goals. It is expected, Mr. Speaker, that during the financial year 2005-2006, a counselling unit will be established within the Ministry to offer support to public officers with personal or work-related problems. This unit will coordinate and facilitate programs aimed at improving motivation and productivity. Such training programs will entail, inter alia, life skills such as personal budgeting, confidence building, planning for retirement, and stress management. These interventions, Mr. Speaker, would be geared towards the reduction and elimination of pilferage, corruption, and low morale in the public service. The counseling unit, Mr. Speaker, is also expected to spearhead education programs on the HIV, AIDS, and drug abuse workplace policies, as well as providing counseling and support for HIV, AIDS infected and drug addicted officers. This unit, Mr. Speaker, will have a heavy workload from its inception, as the provision of these services is long overdue by the public service of St. Lucia. The White Paper on Public Sector Reform 2000 proposed the revision of the reclassification and pay plan, which was developed 13 years ago. This long overdue initiative seeks to 1. Review, present positions, grades, and salary scales. 2. Upgrade, downgrade, and change nomenclature of numerous posts. 3. Revise job descriptions. 4. Incorporate into benchmark qualifications the new qualifications such as advanced diplomas, professional certificates, and so forth. And 5. Regularize the inequity in the classification of posts. Upon completion of this exercise, this financial year, it is envisioned that grades would be commensurate with qualifications, and structures of all agencies would be improved thereby enhancing their efficiency. In tandem with the review of the reclassification and pay plan is the establishment of a performance management system. This would entail a comprehensive review of the present system and instruments used for measuring. This exercise, Mr. Speaker, is expected to promote an environment of continuous learning and growth of public officers. And this system would link work performance to results and outcomes, improve strategic planning and resource allocation, improve the functioning of the public service, integrate each agency's vision and values into its daily activities, and provide information for decision making. A new system of performance management will entail training and retraining of all managers, supervisors and staff, and is expected to bring about attitudinal, behavioral, and cultural change. Mr. Speaker, we expect to enhance the Graham Lewisey Administrative Building with repairs to the anti-glare window screens and painting of the exterior walls in order to maintain the upkeep. This was last done about 10 years ago, and technical advice received by the Supreme Ministry recommends that this should be executed immediately to avoid further deterioration. Mr. Speaker, as alluded to earlier, this ministry expects to drive its in-service training program more vigorously this year. Such programs will be aimed towards bridging the gap between the academic certification and the skills required for the job. Particular attention will be paid to strengthening the middle management streams to prepare officers to take on senior management positions. So more attention will be paid to succession planning, thereby ensuring continuity in the public service. Mr. Speaker, such an extensive training plan calls for increased space and enhanced facilities such as materials and equipment. The Public Service Training Center for Excellence will include one, a computer lab, additional training room to accommodate 50 persons, and breakout rooms. This, of course, requires electrical work, furniture, equipment, planting, and shelving. Mr. Speaker, by June of this year, in somewhat reiteration, we are hoping again to bring into existence a Public Service Act, which will replace the archaic, anachronistic and virtually irrelevant staff orders, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, at this point in time, we shall now focus our attention on the constituency of Labrie. Labrie is affectionately known as the Lab, where minds contend, persons ascend in a cauldron of seething creative activity and passion, and where the dialectic of postures are given numinous expression as synergies are established in a sublime thrust for community betterment, elevation, and solidarity. Should I repeat that, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, as we have said in times past, we have articulated the needs of this constituency again and again and again. Since 1987, we have divulged to all and sundry the dreams and aspirations of this community and importuned the powers that be, the positive intervention in the realization of the needs and wants of the Lab. And for many a year, Mr. Speaker, and for many a year, silence embraced those needs, those aspirations, in a blanket of vindictive wrath. But uncowed, unbent, not vanquished, the Lab pillowed her loyalty on the breast of time and waited consciously and with the eyes of a recording angel. And on that fateful day, Mr. Speaker, beneath the azure skies of May, she aroused herself from the painful slumber of the years and dance into the arms of the President, pregnant with expectations and hopes. And now, Mr. Speaker, 18 years later, 8 years from the commencement of that dance, not all her needs have been met, not all her dreams have left their ethereal domain. And so her aspirations are there in poignant expectancy, surrounded by flowers of hope and the goodwill of men other than ourselves. Mr. Speaker, it is to be noted that man is essentially a bundle of needs, and if all those needs are to be fulfilled, then he ceases to be man. So needs are a condition of becoming, a priori, and a sine qua non for being, a posteriori. Mr. Speaker, we have just very briefly embarked on a philosophical tangent that falls in the realm of ontology. And so, continuing with our general theme, Mr. Speaker, we see with a tempered eagerness the sunrise of another time. And yet the curtain that needs to be drawn across the threshold of our commitment, our promises, is being held back by forces beyond our control. And so perplexed but undaunted, Mr. Speaker, we flag these needs, yes, unborn, as the bewildering and blowing winds of partial silence and partial inaction. And so once again, Mr. Speaker, we shall go through the pilgrimage of hope in terms of blocks, concrete, and stone. And hopefully as the sunrise and the sunset conjoin to establish a new order of things, there will be concrete responses to those needs commensurate with the extraordinary epiphany of loyalty that has characterized this special constituency over the past 50 years. Mr. Speaker, what has been achieved in Labrary through dint of perseverance, tenacity, and accommodation is not our major focus at this time. The achievements of the past rest with the people and their sense of history. What really concerns us is what needs to be achieved before this electoral term evidences its denouement. Mr. Speaker, when the St. Lucia Labour Party assumed the governance of this country, the roads were for the greater part in a dilapidated condition. And since 1997, we have repaired, we have refurbished virtually all of these roads. But the amazing thing is that many of those roads are still in need of repair, reconstruction, refurbishing. And this government has spent millions of dollars on those roads. And so the problem as we see it is not a certain delinquency on the part of this government as regards the discharging of its responsibility in this regard. The problem lies, Mr. Speaker, with those who reconstruct, refurbish, repair those roads. We are not getting value for money. And when an engineer states at a meeting that a road is supposed to last 5 years, then something is patently wrong. As we see it, Mr. Speaker, road builders should give government the undertaking that if a pothole appears within a certain time frame on a road built or refurbished by them, then it becomes their responsibility to rectify the situation. Until such time, we shall continue to repair again and again the 43 roads in the constituency of Labrary. Again, at this time, we have to look at Majumel, at Banff, Devois, Mont-Liblas, and Lahou. Monies have already been allocated, and some work is about to begin in Banff and Lahou. But like most things, it is all a matter of time. However, it is to be noted that for the year under review, $297,204.72 was spent for the partial refurbishment of roads throughout the Labrie constituency. Mr. Speaker, we are not in the 70s and the 80s when banana was green gold and grants flowed into this country from various and very generous international donors. We live in a very different time, economically and otherwise. The world regionally and internationally has changed. Just listen, Mr. Speaker, to the news and watch your 12-year-old daughter at her computer. At this time, Mr. Speaker, it gives us some satisfaction to state that the construction of the long-awaited administrative center has begun. This is a $1.2 million project, and Labrie will be the first constituency to have an administrative center, and which hopefully, Mr. Speaker, will be completed by November of this year. It will be an important structure that will enhance the architectural landscape of the village, and in conjunction therewith, augment its municipal services and administrative competences. I can hardly wait for the cutting of the ribbon, Mr. Speaker, by the child or grandchild of someone who attended the St. Anthony Private School run by the Medu sisters, Jesse and Olian. Mr. Speaker, the second project that is dear to our heart is the construction of the Human Resource Development Center in Auger and La Grasse. The former would serve the communities of Café, Maganier, Montvert, and the latter, Laho, Béwangé, and Vance. With regard to the Auger project, we have already identified a portion of NDC lands that, in our opinion, will be ideal for the location of such a community facility. Funding for this project is being sourced from the European Special Framework of Assistance Fund, and we have had discussions with Mr. Wilfred Pierre of the National Coordinating Authority, and he has given us the guarded, qualified assurance that the requisite funding will be obtained through or from the EU. And hopefully by June or August of this year, we will see some development in this regard. The Prime Minister undoubtedly will, when approached, will give us the further assurance that the parcel of land targeted will be made available for this intended project. Mr. Speaker, in very recent times, we have again written to the BNTF Basic Needs Trust Fund and the PRF Poverty Reduction Fund concerning the Human Resource Development Center for the La Grasse community. Again, a parcel of private land has been targeted. This portion of land which has also been targeted for a playing field, and it has a peculiar history of its own. Our first official visit to the site was with the former Minister of Community Development, Mr. Desmond Braffett. Subsequent to his visit and promises made, another visit to the site was made, but in the company of a new Minister of Community Development. And in very recent times, another visit was made in the company of Mr. Henry Mangal, the permanent secretary responsible for sports. We must confess that Mr. Mangal has been working most assiduously, Mr. Speaker, has been working most assiduously on our behalf and on behalf of the Banff La Grasse community. The project of the playing field will cost $473,231 and will be done in three phases, starting almost now. By June of this year, a playing field, regardless how unfinished, will be discernible on the designated site. Banff La Grasse is at last getting its playing field. And so our thanks and appreciation go to Mr. Henry Mangal. And with regards to the Human Resource Development Center, Mr. Speaker, funding in this regard is presently being sourced. And so with the completion of the playing field this year in La Grasse, we do hope that the need for the construction of the Human Resource Development Center will be further appreciated by funding agencies, local, regional, and international. Mr. Speaker, the next project of concern is the completion of the Rudy John Beach Park with an arts and crafts center. Incidentally, this park is the premier bathing and family planning area and family picnicking area in the South, despite the utter vandalism and the wanton destruction of its 15 picnic tables. Plans for the Arts and Crafts Center have already been drawn by the planning department. All that is needed are the funds. In this regard, applications have been submitted to the BNTF and the PRF. We are awaiting their response. A tentative commitment that had been made by an embassy has been withdrawn, and so the search continues. Incidentally, two ambassadors have visited the site. Mr. Speaker, as we see it, the Arts and Crafts Center will provide training and employment for the youth of this constituency and will indeed enhance the touristic potential of the lab. Mr. Speaker, the electrification of the Labrie constituency is about 96% complete. Settlements in times past, as was called the heart of darkness, no longer exist, except in the Mount Kapwit area, where there is a cluster of about 4 to 5 houses. What needs to be done, hopefully, and will be done this year, is that Mr. Trevor Luizi, the Managing Director of LUSEC, will be visiting this constituency in order to assist us in the realization of this dream, which is a full and comprehensive electrification of this visit, of the library. And that visit, Mr. Speaker, will take place hopefully within the next few weeks. It is to be noted, Mr. Speaker, that for the year under review, 58,164.52 dollars were spent in the lab on the electrification program. In our plan of action 2001-2006, several projects were alluded to and which we hope would be addressed during that period of time. There's still another year to go, another year to be loyal, another year to hope. Some of these projects, Mr. Speaker, are as follows. The construction of the lavatory promenade, and in this regard, we have had discussions with the Ministries of Communications and Works and Planning. Possibilities are presently being explored as far as funding is concerned. The reconstruction of the Larivière-Tibois Bridge. In our last discussion with the Ministry of Communications and Works, we were given the assurance that through funding by the World Bank, this bridge will at last be reconstructed this financial year. Larivière-Tibois Bridge. 3, the construction of the youth center in the village of Lavery. This facility will complement the administrative center and will provide much needed space for indoor recreational activities, office space for the Lavery youth and the sports council, and an auditorium. Its proposed site is in the Crossover Park area. This is a project which we hope will come to fruition in the year 2006. Project 4 is the construction of a playing field and community center in the isolated community of Matumel, the sanctuary of our slaved forefathers. But in freedom time, it has emerged as a vibrant farming community. In the billowing seas of competing aspirations, hopes, and dreams, this particular project is endeavoring to rise to the surface of this community's realities. 5, construction of the Labrie Village Wall. The erosion that has occurred over the years poses a very real threat to neighboring homes and to the Louis Hill Road that skirts it. Urgent remedial attention is needed at this time. Two ministers from the same ministry, but at different times, have visited the site. To date, we await refurbishment or its violent but inevitable destruction. The elements are indifferent, but the community is concerned. 6, the construction of the Pitibug Road in the village. If we can correctly recall, Mr. Speaker, this road has not been attended to for the past 50 years. And when the lifespan of a well-built road is approximately 15 years, then the condition of this thoroughfare need not be elaborated upon. To say that it is in need of repair is superfluous. The evidence on a daily basis engages one feet in a macabre dance of neglect. 6. Projects. This deals with the construction of footpaths, which we hope will be constructed before 2006 comes to a close and if at the end of the electoral term. Some of these are located at the following sites: of the Mont-Leblanc Road, the eastern side of the bypass, the junction of Louis Hill and St. Isidore Hill, opposite Bueller's Restaurant into Lamar, and off Eucalyptus Avenue. Mr. Speaker, the seventh and last project is the extension of water service along the Mont-Leblanc Road and into Mont-Paul. We have alluded to Mont-Paul so many times in the recent and distant past. The lack of this essential service in the Mont-Paul community has been brought to the attention of all relevant authorities since 2001. I again refer to Mont-Paul at last year's budget presentation. This year, on or about the 4th of February 2005, we received this letter from the Managing Director of WASCO. And it reads, Mr. Speaker, with your indulgence, dear Honorable Minister, we wish to advise that we were unable to carry out this project internally due to financial constraints. However, the initial estimate of $29,303.39 was forwarded to the Poverty Reduction Fund in August 2001, and we have not received a response to date. Attached is a revised estimate in the amount of $56,670.07, which will be forwarded to the Poverty Reduction Fund. It would be appreciated if you could liaise with Mr. Donovan Williams of the Poverty Reduction Fund in an effort to expedite the process. We await confirmation from the PRF on this project. We remain willing to implement this project as soon as funds are available. Between 2001, Mr. Speaker, and now, how many times have we written, spoken about the water situation at Mont-Paul? Should we again ask the people of Mont-Paul to be patient? Or should we encourage them to put on their marching boots? It is all about water, an essential service, and the year is 2005. Mr. Speaker, with regard to the projects alluded, we will not be working alone. We are linked with the Labrie Village Council and the Labrie Development Foundation. Their goal, their primary objective is developmental, whereas ours is developmental and political. However, in the final analysis, there's a functional congruence and synergy that will redound to the benefit of this constituency and to the credit of this government. The quest for the optimal development is for us, the Holy Grail. And so we shall assiduously pursue this quest in this and beyond this time. For in the constellation of the stars, the Lab deservingly stands alone in its humble magnificence. At this time, Mr. Speaker, we would like to express our thanks and appreciation to the people of Laho, Béwangé, Chatney, Adoudou, Valley, Bans, Lagrasse, Olibo, Mont-Carbouit, Solitude, Mont-Paul, Maganier, Catin, Mont-Vert, Black Bay, Oje, Safi, and Labrie Village for their undying loyalty, their remarkable patience, and for their assistance in various forms in the discharging of our official responsibilities. So far it has been an extraordinary experience, gratifying in some ways, but disappointing in others. But that is life. In rerum natura est, it is in the nature of things. Virtually all of what has been done in Labrie, Mr. Speaker, and for Labrie, has been done through the concerned intervention of the Prime Minister on one level or the other. And so at this time, we do humbly express our thanks and appreciation for his positive intervention in the life of our people. We further would like to express our thanks and appreciation to the staff of the Ministry of Labor Relations of Public Service and Cooperatives. We have had some trying times, but in the main they were good and productive. We all have endeavored to build a public service that works for the people, but there is still some distance to go before we so attained. For the goal of public sector reform is quality service, optimal service, compassionate service to the people of this country. At this juncture, Mr. Speaker, we shall conclude our presentation to this Honorable House, and in the process of so doing, reiterate our unequivocal support for the Appropriations Bill for 2005-2006. I thank you, Mr. Speaker.